Today's Veterans Radio program is dedicated to those who flew and maintained the heavy bombers during World War II.
From the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, this is Veterans Radio. And now, here's your host, Bob Gould.
Good morning, all of you out there, all across America and around the world. Welcome to another program of Veterans Radio. We're broadcasting live from the studios of WDEO on the Ave Maria Network, right here in beautiful, absolutely beautiful and celebratory, I must say that, Ann Arbor, Michigan. And sitting to my right is my partner. How you doing, partner? Mr. Dale Throneberry.
Good morning, Bob. It's a real pleasure to be here. And as Bob was mentioning, it is a gorgeous day here in Ann Arbor. And
always. I'm going to hear about that.
Yeah, probably sometime around February. But anyway, we want to welcome you to Veterans Radio today. As Bob pointed out, he's got a great program. We're talking about B-17s, one of his favorite airplanes I know.
I had a chance to ride in one.
I know you
did. So when I read the book, I was right there, and they have the Yankee Air Museum. They do give rides. All of you folks, if you happen to have that opportunity to ride and fly in a B-17, or B-24, or B-25, do that.
It was. I knew that's why I gave you this book.
Uh-huh.
You know, to talk to me, because I knew that you had a love affair with the B-17.
Oh, it's an excellent
thing.
And
I think it's important. I did have one thing I wanted to mention before you get to your people that you wanted to talk to. And that's that yesterday was MIA POW Day, making sure that we remember all of our MIAs and POWs. There's still some out there, and we want to make sure that we don't let the government and all those people in power forget about them, because we certainly don't. And we know the statement is, you know, all paid some and some paid all. And we want to make sure that we don't ever forget our MIAs and POWs.
Amen. Amen to that. At the top of the program, we generally have general information available to you folks out there, you, the veterans, and the families of veterans. So sometimes they're of a local fair. That's okay. The reason we do that is for the kind of stimulate your interest so that you start to think about where else that you can look in your neighborhood, wherever your community is, and find veterans organizations, veterans events. That's how we all get connected. Is that right, Dale?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We had a great event a couple of weeks ago with our local VVA organization and got to give talks about helicopters. Some small kids jumped all over. We have a Huey down there, and they were all over the aircraft.
Oh,
they
love
it.
That. They love
do.
That.
That and tanks and trucks and so forth, and it's a great way for them to hear the stories from the people that were actually there.
So when you hear these little snippets that we do, we want you to think about your community. Go out and get involved. And speaking of that, I have a gala, the gala chairman, Kerry Dial. Did I get that right, Kerry?
I've been called worse. It's actually deal like deal the cards.
But, okay.
Dial, I'm used to that one as well. I grew up in school with that name practically.
Okay. Tell us about that event that's happening today on Gross Hill here in Michigan.
I would be more than happy to. Today is our second annual gala. We did one last year, of course, as our preliminary, and it was a big success. So the success of what happened last year has been rolled into an even bigger event this year. Today, starting at 3 o'clock, the gates opened for another Veterans Gala, and in particular, we're honoring our Korean War veterans and anyone who was ever stationed at Naval Air Station Gross Hill. Now, for those listeners out there who are not familiar with Naval Air Station Gross Hill, it was on the southern end of an island in the Detroit River, just where it empties into the northwestern corner of Lake Erie. It was in operation for about 40 years and was one of the key bases for training Navy pilots, especially during the war, and was an extremely active base. Well, most of those veterans have moved on, but they've never forgotten, and they still have reunion groups, and we got to meet a couple of them a couple of years back, and we've made the event grow, and this year we're going to have Channel 7's Alicia Smith as our MC. We've got the Detroit Arsenal of Democracy setting up a display of military vehicles, just like you gentlemen were just talking about. We've got the Monroe Big Band is coming in and playing. We've got food services, of course. It's the 50s theme, since we were honoring Korean War veterans. And everybody's coming in costume. There's dance contests.
But what if they don't have a costume? Can they come anyway?
They're more than welcome. It doesn't matter. No, we want people to come down. The whole event centers around thanking those veterans who have served our country, and were especially like with the Korean War. There was a lot of that was sort of the forgotten era, and we're paying them a special tribute. So you come on down and you'll have a great time.
What's the name of the event?
We've called this our annual Veterans Gala. Since it was such a success after the first one, we decided, okay, this will be an annual event. And the name will stay the same, but the theme will change. For instance, the very first one was based on a World War II theme, and so we did a fabulous 40s swing dance. This year is our fabulous 50s, and so we're concentrating on music of that particular period, and we've got live singers and everything else to go along with it. Next year, we're going to celebrate the Vietnam era, and make a special salute for all those Vietnam veterans who weren't treated so well when they first came back home during that period of time. So we're going to show them a good time this time.
What time do the doors open today?
Right, thank you. Yeah, the doors actually open at 3 o'clock, and basically, everything will officially kick off at around 4 o'clock, and all the events that I had mentioned earlier will be taking place. But then as it finishes up and concludes that evening, out on the south end on the runway, we are going to even actually have a fireworks display for everybody as well. So it's a great event. And, you know, you mentioned before about how the communities can get together and maybe do things similar to what, like we're doing now. Our first one was done on a zero budget. It was just a great idea to start it out and get it going, and we worked with the community. We got involved with the local VFW and the township. They embraced the idea, and when the people found out we were honoring a special group of veterans, B-26 pilots, who were, you know, dwindling in numbers, everybody got on board, and we made it a surprise party for them. So the gentleman walked into a standing ovation. There wasn't a dry eye in the house. It was great.
Now, I understand you're going to have a static display, which is,
yes.
I have a photograph, but I didn't bring it. You know, I don't know how to do that stuff, right? But do we have a B-25? Well, Dale will probably get that. We have a B-25 is going to be there. Is that correct?
That is correct. Actually,
it's a beautiful airplane.
It won't be quite so static this morning. It's coming in. It's going to arrive at 11 o'clock prior to the event. So people who haven't, you know, seeing these rascals in the air, that's a great opportunity to come down and watch her land and taxi up. And what he's going to do is he's going to actually look to solicit a few rides on that B-25 prior
today?
To the event.
This afternoon?
Yes, yeah. Courtesy of the Yankee Air Museum. I'd like to let everybody know that it's the Yankee Air Museum that has even gotten involved with us. And so the airplane will be there, and there's actually the opportunity for people to take a ride just prior to the event as well.
I just wanted to jump in because I was saying that I think it was the B-25 that did a flyover over Michigan Stadium last Saturday night at the Michigan Ohio Michigan Notre Dame game, and people were all upset because it was so slow.
Well, we'll have to talk with Robert Dorr about that.
Yeah, we'll get. what kind of flyover was that thing? You know, rambled my window.
I
lived near the stadium.
It
was gorgeous.
Buddy.
It was at night. It was beautiful.
It's beautiful.
Silhouetted against the sky.
When the Yankee Air Museum has their flyovers with the B-17, they come right over my place. So I can hear, and I know that Wright engine, that Wright Cyclone engine, I can hear that from a long way away. Imagine, 1,400 of those going at once. But anyway, I digress. Let's go back. So it's $15 per person. What about the kids?
Well, kids is just one set price, $15. But, I mean, if children are like 6 and under, we're not going to charge for them. The money is going to go towards restoring this old historic hangar that we have down here at the old clothes base, and we're also attempting to create a museum. Now, there's so many former Naval Air Station veterans that they get together for reunions, and they've got a lot of artifacts they would like to donate and everything, so we're trying to create a space where they can actually have a museum area. Actually, our township hall has even got a bit of a museum going now. When you first walk into the doors, the whole lobby area, of course, since it's at the airport, has all sorts of showcases and things of items that have been donated already, but we're getting more and more as time goes by, and we want to expand that if we can.
Okay, will there be food there?
Oh boy, will there be food?
Good.
We've got a professionally catered this year, and
ooh,
they're going to have.
Now that'll be starting at 4 o'clock. People can get food.
People can buy food from 4 o'clock on. There's going to be pulled pork sandwiches, hamburgers, hot dogs, and, of course, you know, your potato salad, things like that. So come with an appetite.
Well, that sounds good. Folks, you heard it right here. Grow Seal, if you're within 100 miles of Grow Seal, which is, I would say, south of Detroit, Michigan, then why don't you think about coming on out for today's gala, the annual Veterans Gala. It starts, the doors open at 3 o'clock. Bring the kids. Bring Mama, you want to go on out there, and I think you're going to love the area. Grow Seal is a beautiful, beautiful place to visit, and you'll be able to see some wonderful historical photographs, artifacts, as well as
and a
B-25. Right, and you get a chance to schmooze with other veterans. So, Kerry, I want to thank you very much for being on our program.
I'm honored. I'm honored, sir.
And good luck today.
Thank you so much. Bob, Dale, thank you again.
You're welcome.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
Well, so here we go. Are you going to be there? You were thinking of being there.
I'm thinking. I don't know. I might show up. You never know.
Yeah.
We are going to be on the road. For those of you that are listening out in the northeastern Ohio, western Pennsylvania area, we're going to be in Pittsburgh on the weekend of October 1st doing our live broadcast from the Military Writers Society's conference at the... it's the Airport Marriott, Pittsburgh Airport Marriott, and that's on October 1st. So if you want to see what the heck we look like or, you know, see what happens on a veteran radio remote, come on down. We'll be there live at 9 o'clock. Meet some great authors and some great stories, great veterans out there.
And now's a good time to remind our listeners that short, heavy guy in a red suit is going to be coming in just a couple of months.
Oh, that's
so
right.
Now is the time to have your pencils and papers, starting with today's author, because we're going to be giving you books that have been recommended by us, probably interviewed the authors by us. So it's going to be an opportunity for you to do a little shopping.
That's
and
right.
And it will be an alternative to the tie and the socks. We're talking about some military books. Okay, folks, we'll be right back with Robert Dorr, author of Mission to Berlin.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill, the benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
Okay, welcome back to Veterans Radio. We have of our first guest will be Robert Dorr, author of Mission to Berlin. I have this holding up right here. A story about World War II, heavy bomber pilots and crews on their way to Berlin. And before I introduce and bring Bob right here in our program, I want to read something from Chapter 14. 10,000 American bombers fell in battle during World War II. A mighty chunk of that total consisted of B-24s of the 8th Air Force. And looking back on those days when the sky was pungent with exhaust, black with exploding shellfire, and swarming with Messerschmitts and Focke-Wulfs, some men wondered simply how they had done it. And with me right now is Mr. Robert Doerr, author of many books, I believe about 70 total. He wrote the book Mission to Berlin. He's currently on working on another book, Mission to Tokyo. And I want to say, folks, this Mission Berlin is absolutely a page-turner. Mr. Doerr, welcome to Veterans Radio. And Bob Doerr on the black phone. Oh, okay. All right. Well, we're going to have to get him back. Let's go on with Bill Rosnail. Bill was a B-17 navigator. Bill, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Oh, hi, Bob. It's Bill Rosnail. I know it's a tough last name, but that's me.
Yeah, okay. Bill, you were a navigator on a B-17.
Yeah, that's right.
And how many missions did you fly?
35.
Oh, so you reached the magic number.
Yeah, I got done before the war ended.
Was it really was it really when the 35th was over, that was it? You kissed the ground, turn on your uniform, and that's it.
That's right. We went to a holding area and got on a troop ship and headed home.
And what year was that month?
I finished in April, and the first day in May, we sailed. We finally got away, and we were about halfway across when the VE day happened. So we were one of the first ships to land in Boston after the war in Europe ended. Quite an ovation.
Well, that sounds like you were one happy person at that point.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Were you
glad to get through with it.
Were you married?
No.
Oh, okay, well then.
I was 20.
And I'll bet your mom and dad were real happy at that point.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. 35 missions. And approximately what percentage of friends that you knew that made that magic number?
Gee, I don't know. It got a little easier near the end of the war, but I guess it was pretty... At first, if you were lucky to get 11 missions.
Okay.
At the beginning.
Okay. Well, standing by right now, and now we have Mr. Robert Doerr, author of Mission to Berlin. Welcome to Veterans Radio, Bob.
Good morning.
Hey, we made the connect, and I know you're having phone troubles, too, so we'll just see if we can hold this thing together.
Well, I just got on when I heard a reference to 35 missions, and that's quite an achievement.
Yes, it was. Approximately, what percentage actually made that?
As your other guest was starting to say, toward the end of the war, it got a little bit easier.
Okay, so...
In my book, Mission Berlin, my just published book about bomber crews in World War II, there is a tragic story about a crew that has completed its 35th mission, is flying home, has never been touched by the Germans, and doesn't make it home.
Okay, Bob, the men who flew, maintained, supported, and escorted heavy bombers and crews. They've acquired quite a reputation as a result of movies like 12 O'Clock High, and the Pappy Boyington television program and books and et cetera that were written, they've had this romanticized status. And that goes from generation to generation. What do you think that is, Bob?
Well, Pappy Boyington was on the other side of the world. But the air war in Europe just had all of these different ingredients made for an extraordinary adventure narrative story. The bomber crews had to fight against the cold, against the altitude, against the flying conditions, against the weather, and that was before they even met the Germans. And the fighter pilots who escorted them had to deal with the German Air Force.
Well, Bob, now, when did the Air Force officially really get involved with heavy precision bombing daylight?
The American strategy of precision daylight bombing was developed in the 1930s based on experience in the previous war. And as I describe in my book, Mission to Berlin, there was initially a very small cadre of Americans who set up the 8th Air Force in England, but it became the largest military formation ever assembled.
And what was the results of that? Oh, we lost them.
You know, I'm still with you. I'm getting a feedback on the
right.
phone.
Right, we're gonna call you back on the other line that you gave us. So we're gonna call you right back. Okay,
all
so
right.
We can clear this up. All right.
Okay.
These things happen, folks. It is live radio, and with all the flooding and storms we're having down in Virginia, apparently the phones are not working that well. So while we're waiting for Bob to call us back and we get a clearer line, I have on the line with me Wendell Galbraith. Wendell, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you.
Yeah, there we go. This is the man, folks. We're going to devote about the last 15 minutes of this program to speaking with Wendell. Now, what is Wendell? Wendell went on bombing missions in a B-24, and he bailed out. After being hit by heavy flak, his bomber, he bailed out at 25,000 feet. Now, I won't let Wendell say anything right at this moment. You got to hear this story, folks. You absolutely have to hear this story of this man and what he did and how he survived it. And it goes on and on and on. I would like to go as much as I can in detail today, but we still want to get... Oh, yeah, and I'm getting signals from everybody. All right. Okay. Why don't we go to Marine Scholars again? Okay. We'll be right back. You're listening to Veterans Radio.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University by combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill. The benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu. Or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
You're listening to Veterans Radio on WDEO Ann Arbor, 990 AM.
Okay, we're back again. Now let's see if we can get everything working and get back on with our mission. I have on line one Mr. Robert Dorr, the author of Mission to Berlin. Bob, once again, welcome.
Once again, I'm here, I hope.
Oh,
Bob
yeah.
Dorr.
Mm-hmm. Well, we don't have that feedback right now. So, here are these crews and pilots. They're now starting to ratchet up. The missions into France, the missions into Berlin. Well, tell us about this particular mission that's coming up now, the Mission to Berlin on February the 3rd, 1945.
You wake up in the morning, it's cold. It's always cold. It's cold on the ground. It's cold in the air. It's cold in the barracks. You wear heated electrical suits because you're going to be flying at 28,000 feet, which is an altitude where men have never fought before. And as described in my book, Mission to Berlin, you're going to be on oxygen. You're going to be in an unpressurized airplane that's very cold. It's so cold that crew members receive the Purple Heart for frostbite. And the thing that you're afraid of most when you begin the mission and launch into your takeoff from your airfield in England is the forming up of the formation to travel into Europe because collisions occur in the soupy, wet, cold, bad weather over England, and nothing is scarier than a collision while getting ready to fly the mission. I just said all of those things, and I haven't even mentioned the Germans yet.
Go ahead and mention the Germans.
Well, in Mission to Berlin, I describe a February 3rd, 1945 mission in which the Germans are in the position of having to defend against 1,003 B-17 bombers that are coming to Berlin, plus 434 B-24s coming to Magdeburg, plus 944 escort fighters. And it becomes a massive air battle over Berlin in which 15,000 Americans are involved. And one of the early pioneers of the methods that are used in the bombing in Europe would say whenever asked, please don't refer to this as a raid.
Mm-hmm.
I've got 15,000 men over Berlin fighting a massive air battle that stretches across thousands of miles. That's not a raid.
And I see here, LeMay says the bombers will get through all that heavy defense, which is going to improve, well, according to LeMay, would improve the accuracy of their bomb runs.
Thanks in large measure to the magnificent P-51 Mustang escort fighter, which gets a couple of chapters in my book, Mission to Berlin. Without escort fighters, those bombers probably might not have gotten through.
Now, there was a Medal of Honor recipient, Major General Major James H. Howard, a fighter pilot. Why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
He was the only American fighter pilot to be awarded the Medal of Honor for an action in Europe. He had served previously in the China-Burma-India area, and he was escorting bombers when he came under heavy fire and was greatly outnumbered. And he fought very valiantly, just showed extraordinary heroism and was awarded the Medal of Honor.
Now, also they were escorted by P-47s, and was it P-38s?
P-38 Lightnings and P-47 Thunderbolts were used throughout the war, but they didn't quite have enough range to escort the bombers all the way to some of the more distant targets, which included Berlin and Merseburg and other locations. So the P-51 offered the three things that the other fighter planes didn't have. It had range, range, and range.
How far could it take? How far could it take and escort the bombers into? Could it go all the way to Berlin?
Yes, a P-51 Mustang could cover the 575 miles from between London and Berlin, and would have enough fuel in its tanks to be able to remain over Berlin for a period of time and fight.
And that was something, you mentioned the fuel, that was something that the pilots and crews looked at, how much fuel that they were drawing that day, and they had a good idea where they were going. Is that right?
Sure, because everything you're doing when you're flying a mission to Berlin is stretching your capabilities to their absolute outer limit, and that's why so many aircraft were lost to non-combat reasons, because the flight was just a strain on all the capabilities that were available.
Okay, we have about a minute before we go on our first break. We got eggs. What was the significance of eggs? Eggs for breakfast.
I'm going to reveal my telephone number in a second so people can call me if they want to learn more about Mission to Berlin. Eggs for breakfast means it's going to be a difficult target. When they have eggs in the chow hall, it probably means that the crews that are going out to climb aboard the bombers in that cold, foggy, wet English morning are probably going to a heavily defended target where they're going to be in great danger.
And all of that, of course, will be revealed in your book. We're coming up on our break, going to the Medal of Honor. We'll be right back here at Veterans Radio. I'm talking with Robert Doerr, the author of Mission to Berlin. You're listening to Veterans Radio right here in WDEO.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them.
Chaplain Joseph O'Callaghan administered to the wounded and dying, led firefighting crews, and directed the jettisoning of live ammunition from his stricken ship. Details after this.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy?
For freedom.
Freedom of religion.
What America stands for.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy? For honor.
Everybody. And watch out for everybody.
Freedom to vote.
Democracy.
Freedom to go outside and play with my kids.
I joined the Navy to serve my country.
Every freedom that we have.
The right to raise our kids in peace.
My little brother. My wife. My kids.
Our children's children.
The United States Navy.
It's not for ourselves alone that we serve.
O'Callaghan was serving as chaplain on board the USS Franklin when that vessel was fiercely attacked by enemy Japanese aircraft. Calmly braving the barriers of fire and twisted metal to aid his men and his ship, O'Callaghan groped his way through smoke-filled quarters to the open flight deck and into the midst of violently exploding bombs, shells, rockets, and other armament. With the ship rocked by incessant explosions, with debris and fragments raining down and fires raging in ever-increasing fury, he ministered to the wounded and dying, comforting and encouraging men of all faiths. He organized and led firefighting crews into the blazing inferno on the flight deck. He directed the jettisoning of live ammunition and the flooding of the magazine. He manned a hose to cool hot armed bombs rolling dangerously on the listing deck, continuing his efforts despite searing, suffocating smoke which forced men to fall back gasping. O'Callaghan inspired the officers and men of the Franklin to fight heroically and with profound faith in the face of almost certain death and to return their stricken ship to port. The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
Okay, we're back on Veterans Radio, and I have with me, as my guest today, Mr. Robert Dorr, author of Mission to Berlin. I'm looking here, and we were talking about 12 o'clock high. Now, what was that, Bob? What exactly was 12 o'clock high?
Early in the bombing campaign over Europe, German fighter pilots developed a tactic of attacking approaching bombers from directly in front and about 5 degrees above the center line of the approaching bomber. So if you use a clock to measure direction, that would be 12 o'clock high. And the reason that they attacked from 12 o'clock high, from straight on, straight ahead, was because they wanted to try to kill the pilots of the bomber, which is the quickest and easiest way to be sure that the bomber would go down.
Bullshit. And that, of course, meant that we had to take some actions on the pilot's part. But also, didn't they put a chin turret underneath the glass?
They did. They put additional guns in the nose of a B-17, including a chin turret that was on late B-17Fs and all B-17Gs. It's debatable whether the guns aboard the bomber really made that much difference, but they certainly helped make the crew members feel better.
Okay, Bill Rosniel, you were a navigator. Was that your job to fire that chin turret?
No, we had a nose gunner, and he also was the one that we didn't have a bombardier. So when he saw the lead plane drop a bomb and it had like a white streaks come down, white smoke bomb, then he toggled our bomb. So we all toggled off the lead bombardier, and he fired the nose guns.
Wendell Galbraith, you were...
Bob?
Yes.
Just one comment. I want to compliment Mr. Dorr on his accuracy. Everything he said was right on. I appreciate him knowing... just exactly how it was. So if anybody is wondering if he was there, it sounded very, very realistic.
Thank you so much. Does this mean I get to tell my telephone number?
Go ahead, Bob. Give that number. We'll do it, but give it again. Go ahead.
Write this down, listeners. 703-264-8950. Bob Doerr, author of Mission to Berlin.
Also, how about your website?
I have a Facebook page in my name, Robert F. Doerr, and I have another Facebook page entitled Mission to Berlin, but I don't have a website.
Okay, so make a phone call, and you'll return their call, and they can get a book directly from you. Good, okay. Now, getting back, Bill, real quick. Now, you had mentioned before that forming up, that was when you and I first met, you were talking about, that was really a scary time. It was a difficult time. And you talked about having a close call. Why don't you tell us about that?
Oh, yeah. In, as you probably guessed, in London or in England, it was quite a bit of fog, and we always flew at night. This particular day, they told us to we assemble at three different heights. There were three squadrons, and we were supposed to assemble at 6,000, 7,000, and 8,000, just below the cloud level. When we got up to that level, the clouds were still there, so they told us to go to 12,000, 13,000, and 14,000 feet and form there. So now we had 36 airplanes circling around, trying to figure out where to go next. And as we were flying along, we saw this plane coming right at us.
Ah.
So, luckily...
I'm scared just listening to this.
Luckily, the other plane pulled up, and we dove down. And our rudder hit the bottom of his ship. And he pulled up so violently, he pulled all the bombs in his bomb bay out. I mean, they weren't armed. And it was such a violent maneuver for him. Now, ours was just as violent going. We were diving down, and I was rattling around, bumping into the nose of the plane. And I really panicked. I scrambled all over. Our parachute was a bundle that we had loose, and we snapped it on. So I finally found my bundle, snapped it on, and I was crawling to the escape hatch, which is just behind the navigator in the nose. I don't know if I was at 500 feet or 5,000 feet. I just wanted to get out. But just as I had my feet out, the pilot said it was pulling the plane up, and I could feel ourselves leveling off, so I got back in. And so we landed, and we looked over the plane, and we could see where all the rivets, and not all of them, but a lot of the rivets in the wings were popping. So wow. We decided we're not going to fly that plane anymore, and they didn't have anything else for us to fly, so we stood down for the rest of that day.
Wow. What about the plane that hit your plane? Did that crew make it?
Well, he came down. He also came down. But he had in fact, there were two bombs that were hung up, and they didn't know what to do with them, so they flew over the English Channel and jettisoned those bombs, none of which were armed. So then he came back to the field, too. So it was kind of an exciting day for both of us, both crews.
Okay.
He's right. We had a tremendous loss of mid-air collisions, you know, in the thousands during the war, both in training and in combat.
Now, keep this in mind, folks, that this is all happening when they're forming up in the dark and in the fog. So it was really a scary time. Wendell, you were away.
Yes,
go ahead. Is Wendell there?
Yes, sir.
There you go. You were a waist gunner. Now, when you were forming up, what were some of the things going through your mind?
Well, just about what was going through his mind. Actually, when we were flying group lead, which we did toward the end, the planes all formed up on us. So, actually, what you were doing was trying to tell a pilot how the formation was going. And that was especially the job of the tail gunner, because they were hooking on to us. And just as Bill says, now we flew out of Italy, and that was horrible weather there. Same thing in the month of January, 45. The whole Air Force only got off the ground five times because of inclement weather.
Because of the weather. Now,
right.
Go ahead.
No,
you were part of that group, and you were the lead plane, and so part of I believe it was Curtis LeMay was talking about carpet bombing. right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, mass bombing. So when you set the signal, that's when everybody dropped their bombs.
Right. I would just say this, that you're the lead plane, and with what was called the deputy lead was on your right wing. And if either one of those two planes dropped, they all dropped on it.
Drop the bombs, that is, right?
Right.
Right.
Right. They toggled them off.
No.
But you were the only guys using the bomb site.
and there were actually two bomb sites, is that correct?
I don't know.
Okay. I thought when we talked about this before that there were actually two of you that were tracking that.
No. That's
And you folks fired a flare to get everybody.
I did. No, I did that. See, from in the When I flew lead in lead plane, I was a radio operator, and I was the lead radio operator, and I had to be up. I did not fly at the waist. I flew on the radio table behind the co-pilot. But you had a Very pistol, and you had to, the pilot would tell you, hey, fire it now. And you had a code of the day, flare, red, green, red, or red, red, or anyway. Planes then knew, as they circled, what was the lead plane and which one they were supposed to hook onto. You understand that?
Yes, I do. So there they were, forming up around you, and then you folks made for...
And all this time, you're circling over your... You got a certain area that you're circling over. Ours was Spinazzola, Italy.
And I'll bet everybody on board just wanted to get started, right?
Oh, yeah.
Let's get going. Bob Dorr, getting back to you. There's a rule that you wrote about in your book. No diaries, no personal diaries. Why was that?
That was for security. And it was pretty much ignored. I mean, one tail gunner told me, as I recount in the book Mission to Merlin, he told me, I didn't keep a diary, I kept a journal. I wrote the date and then I wrote what happened that day. Gosh, that sounds like a diary to me.
Uh-huh.
But for the most part, the men were very careful not to include information that would have been useful to the enemy. So I think that, you know, pretty much the rule against keeping a diary was largely ignored.
Another little thing I have here on the cold, no water at high altitudes. No water.
That was at the discretion of the pilot of the aircraft. The pilot of a bomber was typically a 20-year-old first lieutenant, very young. He was responsible for 10 men early in the war. Later in the war, in the case of the B-17, it was reduced to 9 men. And he was absolutely the ruler of everything that occurred aboard that aircraft. And many pilots simply established a rule that you can't carry any liquids on a mission. Because any liquid will freeze.
It will freeze up there. And there were also something, when you're on those missions, how long was that flight to Berlin forming up? Approximately how long would that be?
Typically 12 hours.
And what was that distance? About 800 miles, was it? 600 miles?
It's about 600 miles from the airfields in East Anglia in England to Berlin.
So they had to take care of business, personal business. We're talking about eating. What did they eat up there? Guys, do you want to talk about that? Bill, what did you have to eat when you were on a mission?
We didn't eat anything.
Okay. You ate in the morning?
We never had any food.
No snacks, right?
And we had a hearty breakfast. You know, all bacon. And breakfast was always good. So we loaded up on breakfast, and then we just waited till we got back for dinner.
How about it, Wendell? What did you bring up with you? Any candy bars?
No. But what we had were K rations, the old World War II K rations.
Uh huh.
And you didn't eat until way back.
So those legendary movies that I saw with the guys having coffee in a thermos, that really was kind of Hollywood. Yeah.
Big joke, yeah.
All right, I'll be back with Wendell, Bill, and Robert Dorr, Mission to Berlin. That takes place on February 3rd, 1945. B-17s, B-24s, penetrating deep, going after the Big B. We'll be right back. You're listening to Veterans Radio.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill, the benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
That's a World War II song. Salute to the men in the air. This is Bob Gould on Veterans Radio right here on WDEO 990 AM. And I have with me on the air interviewing author of Mission to Berlin, Mr. Robert Dorr. Bob, why don't you give us that phone number again?
Bob, I would like people to call me on the phone about my book, Mission to Berlin. And my phone number is 703-264-8950.
One more time, 703-264-8950. Well, I want to conclude kind of like a little trivia. So, folks, if you want to win a beer, whatever, win a bet, the statement, whole nine yards. And where did that come from? Well, you can win the bet right now. Bob, why don't you tell us about that? Where did that come from? Hold on.
Well, there is debate about whether it's really true because there are other explanations for the term. But one of the explanations is that a 50 caliber ammunition belt was 27 feet long.
The whole nine yards.
According to some, that was allegedly the source of the term the whole nine yards.
Well, that should be a free beer for everybody out there. Bob, you're working on some other books. Tell us about that.
Well, as you know, the book Mission to Berlin is in print and available now, and I'm now working on a book about B-29 Super Fortress crews on the great firebomb strike on Tokyo in March of 1945, and that book will be entitled Mission to Tokyo, and it will be out in the middle of next year.
Well, I'm so impressed with your writing skill. I just can't say enough about the book itself. And folks, if you want to looking for that special birthday, Christmas coming up, you want to think about Mission to Berlin. Bob, I'd like you to stay on the line. And once again, though, I want to thank you for being on Veterans Radio, but please stay on the line as I'm going to interview the other two gentlemen. So until then, thanks again, Bob.
Sure.
Okay. I have with me Wendell Galbraith. Wendell's got a special story. Wendell was up in a B-24 at 25,000 feet, and in the just bomb Vienna, Australia. What happened then?
Austria.
Oh, I say Australia. Go ahead. Well, it's 9 o'clock.
What a mission.
That would be a heck of a mission, wouldn't it? So there you are. You just dropped your bomb load. What happened?
Hey, before I go to that, could I just digress for a minute and mention something that might help?
Go ahead.
In your
with
your B-25 thing there. You didn't mention that was the bomber that Doolittle used off the carriers to bomb Tokyo for the first time. That's all I wanted to mention.
Okay. Now let's get back to that raid that you were on.
Right. What do you want to hear, Rob?
Well, here you are. You just dropped your bomb load.
Well, when we got approaching Vienna, you hit what's called an IP, initial point, And that's where you take your aim for the target. And normally that's where the flak starts. And we went, we started on that, and then we ran into cloud cover below us, about 7/10. But we were still trying to bomb visually. So we got up over the target, and then the flak really started to hit us. And then we started to figure out that the bombardier was having trouble picking out the target, which was the marshalling yards. And then, since we were a lead plane, we had three navigators aboard. And then they got arguing about whether to go to a radar bombing, which we had lead and deputy lead plane had radar domes instead of ball turrets. And they said, well, let's bomb Floresdorf Oil Refinery, which was in Vienna.
Now, when you drop...
Using radar.
Wendell, when you drop those bombs, the bombs were bombs away. You were the lead plane. Everybody followed. But then
right. Something
happened right at that point. What? Tell us about that moment.
Well, Let me just say this, but when the bombardier, they were just going to use the radar, and then finally the bombardier said, "I've got the target, I've got it." By the way, my pilot was quite disgusted with him, because we were getting shot up. Good, the bombardier said, "I've got the target, I've got the target," and then we dropped our 40 100-pound bombs. That was our bomb load. And then one of the navigators said, rally certain degree heading to get out of the target. And that's when an 88 flak shell, I'm sure it was an 88, hit us solid. And the whole bomb bay flared up. It was on fire, just a sheet of flame. And that was, since I was up in the front behind the co-pilot, that was an escape point for the co-pilot, pilot, the radar navigator who sat across from me, and the top turret gunner.
Now, you had to make a quick decision right then yourself, didn't you?
Right. You had to make the decision. Your exit has got to be through the fire or I don't know what. I went through about 15 different exit points in my mind, that is. But that was all on fire. Everything was on fire then. So then I said, well, you're going to die if you stay in the plane. And it started to pitch violently. So I jumped out of my chair and got to the catwalk runs through the middle of the bomb bay, ready to jump. And then I realized I had my parachute chest pack only hooked on one hook.
Oh.
So rather than chance it, I stood in the fire and hooked the other end, other side, and then I jumped.
Now, was anybody else going out at the same time, or this was you were pretty much on your own?
I led the way. As I say, when we got hit, the radar navigator sat right across from me. He stood up. He wasn't hurt. He sat back down. I don't know why. Well, I know why. He didn't want to go through the fire. The pilot and co-pilot, and we had a colonel flying with us up there, they went out the small windows, sliding windows on their side, which I didn't think was humanly possible. They're a very limited space.
No,
but all three of them went out there, but the radar navigator, you never knew what happened. I think he tried to bail out the escape hatch at the top of the plane, and that's fatal.
No,
it was fatal.
No, you right there, plane's burning. You had to jump through the bomb bay, and it was a wall of flame, a sheet of flame. That was your decision. Do this now. And plus, you had to pull the ripcord, correct? Open up the parachute. How long did it take you when you exited the plane? How many feet do you think you fell before you pulled the ripcord?
Oh, I'd say maybe 30, 40
That's
feet.
I know. When I talked to you the other day, I love that answer. You know, did you free fall for 1,000 feet? No. How far up were you at that time? Did you know the altitude at that time?
Oh yeah. We'd be at 25,000 feet. No doubt about that.
So you were up there at 25,000 feet. You're starting to free fall. You just went through a wall of flame on the B-24 Bombay. I'm sure you're burned.
Right.
You had some burns. And now you pull the ripcord, the chute opens, you're going over the city that you just bombed.
Right.
And how long was the descent?
It was 35 minutes.
35.
I had my GI wristwatch on because I was a radio operator and they were issued to you. So I timed it. I know it was 35 minutes on the chute.
Did you have a weapon with you at all? Anything?
Actually, I left my .45 up in the plane because I didn't wear it on a mission. If you had a chest holster, and if you wore that, the parachute harness, the flak suit, everything dug into you and choked you. So I just decided, well, I wasn't going to take it. Of course, that was kind of a mistake, but...
And you're coming down over the city that you just bombed. So you,
right.
Right. You were after...
And I was just going to... If I could tell you this, that affair at the Trade Center in New York, when I saw those pictures of that dust rolling, I brought it right back to me to a T. That's what it looked like down there. The dust was rolling.
And, of course, all the flames and such. You're headed to the ground. We've only got less than a minute now to go before the end of the program. We're going to have you back on, Wendell, and go more into detail because you get captured by the Russians and all that other good stuff that we're going to want to cover. So, Wendell, thank you very much for being on Veterans Radio. You have yourself a blessed day. Bill Rosnay, you have yourself a blessed day. Thank you for being on Veterans Radio.
Okay, Bob.
Okay, we'll talk to you again for lunch. And Robert Dorr, author, thank you again for being once again on Veterans Radio.
A pleasure, Bob.
Real quick, give that phone number.
703-264-8950, Mission to Berlin.
Thank you very much. Okay, we've got about 20 seconds, and this is Bob Gould, Veterans Radio. We want to thank you very much for listening to our program. Be sure to tune in next week. Yep, there's our theme song. Be sure to tune in next week, same time, 0900 hours Eastern Standard. Until then, from the crew and myself, Veterans Radio, you are dismissed.
All views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of Veterans Radio. Veterans Radio is a production of Veterans Radio Network.